Whoops. It's okay. If you weren't here last week, it's okay. Okay. Here's Tracy. Okay. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to week two of Precious Moments. Looking at making every day meaningful, looking at good time management strategies. So what I want to do firstly is just spend a few minutes on review with a few extra comments from last week, just so we set the tone. Last week we talked about... Last week we talked about time management from a character ethic point of view as opposed to a personality ethic. In other words, the inside-out model, that what we're going to explore is time management not from being focused on outcome and productivity, but more from what happens inside and more from our character, from who we are, what our values are. We had a bit of a look at... Ready? We had a bit of a look at the concept of the sanctity of time, the idea that ask some chairs here. Maybe ask the colleagues to bring a few more chairs. One at the back. Yeah. Oops, sorry. Okay. It's a good problem to have. Let's move on. Here we are. Let's please listen. Put this chair there. There we are. Are they bringing more? Good. Okay. Excellent. Okay. We had a look at. Here, we ready to go? We had a look at the sanctity of time, the concept of sanctifying and holding every moment precious, make every moment meaningful. We didn't mention this last week, but in Psalms, King David HaMelech, has a very interesting verse where he says, he asks God and he says, "Teach us to count our days, and then we shall acquire a heart of wisdom." In other words, teach us the value of every day, teach us the idea of being able to hold every day precious. There was once a great Hasidic Rebbe, and he said, when he was talking about the importance of not wasting time and holding every day precious, he said, "A summer day and a winter night is an entire year." Right? What was it? Another aspect of using the time well is this: when we waste time, it's also a reflection on our perspective of ourselves. In other words, sometimes we're actually not convinced that we count. We're not convinced that what we do in every moment actually makes a difference. And one of the foundations of Jewish thought is that every moment, everything, every action that we do makes a difference. As I've told you many times, the Maimonides, the Rambam says that a person should always view themselves as if the whole world is in balance on a scale. And we can tip the scale for the positive. It's not meant as an onerous sort of responsibility, but it's meant as the valuing everything that we do, every positive thing we do, even if it's 1 minute, even if it's 2 minutes, it makes a world of difference. Now, last week we also looked at time management as a concept which requires synergy, really, of the many, many aspects that we have in our lives, right? I think that's one of the foundations, to understand that our life experience is made up of multiple different components. And good time management means that we have to give attention, and this will become a lot clearer as we go along, but we have to pay attention to and give time to the various parts of life, which includes, and this is the big mistake that people make often when trying to manage their time and become more effective, become more productive, is that they don't take care of themselves. And ultimately, if we don't take care of ourselves properly, whether it's our health, whether it's our own personal growth, whether it's our spirituality, whatever it is, then we become less productive and we're not able to manage the time properly. Stephen Covey has a wonderful formula for this, and he says it's the P versus PC. P means productivity, and PC means productivity capability. Right? The capability, the ability that we have to achieve and to produce and to accomplish many, many great things. And he says very, very often what happens is there's what he calls a PPC imbalance. That the person is worn out, not taking care of themselves properly, and therefore not able to produce, and not able, therefore, to manage their time effectively. So time management, as we go through the process over the next few weeks, we'll learn that this is really, really important to make sure we give time and create that balance between the various components and priorities that we have within our life. There was a great Hasidic rabbi, he once said, talking about health, for example, he said that even when our pursuit is spiritual growth, we mustn't neglect our physical well-being, for example, which is part of our balance. And he said, a small hole in the body becomes a great hole in the soul. That was his, I think it was from the Maggid of Mizrich. And finally, last week, we looked at three foundations, three important foundations before we embark on the process and the journey of time management, and that is the concept of control, which we divided into three parts. The first thing is self-control, learning the art of self-discipline, being committed to a schedule, being committed to something that we need to do, even though we might not want to do it. The second was the concept of technology, and we talked about this whole idea of who controls who. That something is only wonderful, something is only beneficial when we control it, and it doesn't control us. And that's why I gave you an activity which I was battling with myself after report back. I got not bad marks, not full marks, but not bad. Of having a time of the day, just turn it off and just don't answer the phone or don't answer emails, whatever the case is. And also we talked about the chesed and gvura mix of time management, and that is that as we learn techniques of time management, when we learn to become committed to a schedule and proper planning and goal setting and so on and so forth, we also have to remember the flexibility and the readjustment sometimes when things don't go the way they should. So those are some of the aspects that we covered last week. Now, what I want to do today is take a look at the first few steps of good time management, but bearing in mind that over here in this context, we're looking at time management in the context of self-growth, right? Which means, like I said last week, it's time management based on values, but it also means that good management of our time is not a quick fix. It's a process, because we're going to build it slowly on solid foundations. We're going to try and be a bit practical today as well, and every week, as I said last week, we'll try and end with some practical strategies, but we are building the blocks, we are building the foundations so that we get onto a proper process of how to manage our time based on values. Now, just recently, everything is by divine providence, but recently I've been involved in a program called the Leader in Me program. Leader in Me program is a program which is now being delivered in schools worldwide, and it's a program designed for children, but based on the 7 habits of Stephen Covey, which I love and I think are a great model. I think it's a great model because it's very effective and also because it's very in sync with Torah values and with Jewish values. Many, many of the concepts are really there in Jewish teachings from ancient times. And it's a model I like to use very often, but now I've been brought in, they're doing it at Keset Torah, and I've been asked to sort of bring in the Jewish content and the Jewish flavor. So I've been revisiting some of the stuff, so it actually happens to fit very well with some of the things we're going to do today. So I'm going to quote some of that literature and those teachings as well. Now, good time management, when we manage our days well and we get the best out of every day and make every day meaningful, obviously is going to involve, and some of you talked about it last week when we wrote some things on the board, it's going to involve good planning, day-to-day planning, schedules, attention to detail, and all of that. But we can only do that effectively if we start from before that. And that is what Stephen Covey calls, we begin with the end in mind. Okay. Now, I'm going to have a little bit of fun. I'm going to do an activity which requires writing. If you don't have a pen to write, don't worry. It's not going to take very long. But if you do have a pen and paper handy and something to lean on, I'm going to ask you to do the following. Turn over the page that you have your hand out to a blank page. Okay. We need to do this quickly because we've got a lot to cover. So, and also because it's relevant to the activity to do it quick. Put your pen about 3/4 down the way the page. Okay, so if this is the page, put your pen about here. And I'm going to give you instructions about what to draw. Now, the instructions are going to come very quickly. Right? I'm not going to slow down. I'm going to do them quickly. If you didn't 100% understand it, the rule is you've got to do something. So just draw what you think I said, okay? Okay. So here goes. Number one. Okay, everyone ready? Ready to go? Okay. Make a short line to the right. Stop. Now make a vertical line going up. On top of that, put a ball. Next one, back down to the beginning. Next one, make another line to the right. This time a short vertical line up. A line towards the right-hand corner of the page. Stop. A line towards the lower right corner of the page. Stop. Back down to the baseline. One more line to the right. A large vertical line up. On top of that, put a ball with spikes coming out of it. Okay. Now compare your pictures. Pretty good. Okay, here we go. I'm not going to ask you unless you want. I'm not going to ask you to hold up your pictures. Suffice to say, you can compare with a few people around you and you'll see that it's very different. Everyone's picture is very, very different. I can see just by invading people's privacy over here, looking at some of the pictures in front of me, that we do have some good auditory learners here who can do it even though I spoke very, very fast. But this is what it's supposed to look like. Not bad. Not bad. Not bad. Not bad. Not bad. Okay, now. For the people who got it, that's great. The people who didn't quite get it right. If I would have shown you the picture first and I would have told you that we're going to draw a tree, a house, and the sun, my assumption is it would have helped. Yeah. Right? In other words, if before you started drawing each line separately, you actually had the picture in your mind of what it's supposed to look like at the end, it would have made the world of difference. And that's life. You see, what happens is, we manage each day, we try to be organized, we try to create our schedules for each day, we try to get the maximum output out of every single day, and very, very often what we end up doing is we end up racing from one line to the next, trying to listen to life's instructions and do it properly, but we actually have no idea what it's supposed to look like at the end. We don't have a vision of what it's supposed to look like at the end. In other words, what's our destination? What's our goal? What are all these separate lines fit into? What picture am I going to design, am I going to create at the end of all this? What is the week going to look like at the end? What is the month going to look like at the end? And what is the year going to look like at the end? Or shall I say, what I want it to look like at the end at least. Right? In other words, what's our long-term goal? In another place, Stephen Covey gives a fantastic analogy. The analogy is, let's say you design a ladder and you build a ladder and a ladder is excellent and you want to climb a wall. And climbing a wall, it's a very, very tall wall and it's not an easy wall to climb. So you put the ladder, and it's a strong ladder, it's a good, effective ladder. You put it on the wall, you start going up. I remember I did this recently, you know, a guy came to fix our roof. In the house we had this leak with all the rains, and thank God a few months ago we finally fixed it. But the Israeli handyman insisted that I come with him on the roof. I said, I'm scared of heights. He said, we'll just do it one. Anyway, so I climbed this amazing ladder all the way through from my house. It's a fantastic view. I could see the electrical station that they're trying to build. And anyway, now for sure scared of heights, and I'll never do it again, please God. But anyway, okay. But anyway, so back to the analogy. You take this ladder and you put it on the wall and you climb, and it's an effective ladder, and you finally make it to the top, only to realize you put the ladder on the wrong wall. Right? So what good is it? What good is it that it's a strong ladder, it's a sturdy ladder, you know how to climb, you're not scared of heights, You're able to do it, you do the 50 steps and you get to the top only to realize you've got to the wrong destination. Right? And that's why there's no question that planning each day is critical. But what comes before planning each day is having a long-term goal. Now, I've shared with you this model before, but it's actually a very Jewish concept, this. And it comes from a model called Sfirat HaOmer. You know that between Pesach and Shavuot, between Passover and Shavuot, which is 7 weeks later, coming up soon, there's a special mitzvah. There's 7 weeks from the second night of Pesach till the festival of Shavuot. And there's a mitzvah called counting the Omer. Counting the Omer means, it's an interesting mitzvah, that every night after the evening service, you count the day. So on the second night of Pesach, you say, today is the first day of the Omer. The next night, you say, today is the second day of the Omer. Third day of the Omer, etc. You count up to 49 days. It goes back historically to the time that the Jewish people left Egypt, and they knew that the goal was to reach the mountain of Sinai to receive the Torah and become God's nation. And they, in anticipation, they were excited. So like a little child counts down the days until something exciting happens, they too counted down the days until the event of the Torah would take place, the Torah giving would take place. And so we have that mitzvah as well, and part of that mitzvah is teaching us the value of time. As I said last week, it teaches us the value of every single day. But there's a very fascinating halachic dispute when the halachic authorities analyze this mitzvah. The mitzvah, we make a blessing each night and we count 49 days. The analysis is purely halachic, but it's got a tremendous lesson. There's a big debate in Talmudical commentaries whether counting the 49 days is one whole mitzvah, it's one unit, or in fact, halachically, it is 49 separate mitzvahs. Okay? Now, that's a big, big halachic debate, and in fact, it has many, many halachic ramifications. For example, let's say I skip one day, I forgot, can I still do the next? Have I lost the whole thing? Is it one mitzvah? Is it separate mitzvahs? Obviously, now's not the time to go into the in-depth halachic analysis of what those two opinions represent. But for our discussion, these two opinions actually are not contradictory. They actually represent two parts of the same process. Both are correct. It's one long mitzvah, and it's every day a separate mitzvah. In other words, one long mitzvah means it's one unit. There's a goal at the end. Every day is not separate. Every day is part of a bigger picture. Every day is part of a bigger destination. Every day is part of a bigger goal. Just like the Jews when they left Egypt, when they counted the 49 days, it was one goal. They had one destination which they kept going towards. They needed to get to Mount Sinai to become God's nation and to receive the Torah. Every day had its own journey, but it was one trip. It was one journey, one goal, one destination. There was a long-term goal. Yet at the same time, in order to get to that long-term goal, in order to get to that destination, you need to treat every day separately and plan each day accordingly and value the accomplishments of each small step getting to the destination. Is this clear, right? In other words, both things are true. But before you can make every day valuable, before you can know how to take those small steps one at a time each day effectively, you need to know what that long-term goal is. And therefore, before we can start managing each day separately and properly, really what we need to do is what they call make for ourselves a personal mission statement. Now, a personal mission statement is not something actually you make once. It's something you make once, but then you review all the time. We have to have, and it's a real thing, we each have to have on paper or on screen, you've got to watch what you say these days, right? That's not. You've got to have a personal mission statement. You've got to have direction. What's our destination? As Stephen Covey says, the compass has got to come before the clock. Right? Before you can worry about the minutes each day and how you manage them, you've got to have a direction of where you're going. I was listening to a seminar on this topic, and the presenter made an interesting point. She says, I'm not going to do this activity, but she asked everyone in the room to pick up their hands who has life insurance, to which most of the room actually picked up their hands. And then she says, okay, how many of you have a personal mission statement? And very, very few hands went up. So she says, interesting that most people have life insurance, but very few people have a mission statement, a life mission statement, which means, she said to everyone, everyone's more prepared to die than they are to live. Right? We're making plans for afterwards, but how about making plans of how to live our lives properly? So let's develop this idea a little bit, and this is what I want to spend a few minutes on, developing this concept of a personal mission statement. Firstly, from a Jewish perspective, from a Torah perspective, I mean, this is like bread and butter, right? Because from a Jewish perspective, life is not random. Life has a purpose, a higher purpose. Our purpose in life is to bring meaning to our existence, to ourselves, to others, to the world. Right? We're not just an accident, we're not just random. But when we develop this personal mission statement, there are two critical things that we have to bear in mind. The first thing is, when we talk about our long-term goal, we talk about our own life's mission statement, it has to be based, that long-term goal, what I want to get out of life, what I want life to look like at the end, what I want my life to look like when I reflect back on my life on my 100th birthday, please God, right? That long-term mission statement has to be based on values. Okay. In other words, when we design a long-term plan, we need to re-examine our core values. Because our core values are going to directly affect our mission statement and then directly affect how we do things every single day and how we manage our time. If it's time management based on values, right? Let me give you a couple of examples. You see, if a person has a goal, if their life mission is to make money, right? I brought from that book last week. If that life mission is just to put their whole life immersed completely into gaining material success, right? If that's their value, that's fine. The problem is, you can't then turn around and look back at life and worry and be upset of why my relationships failed. Because that wasn't part of your values. In other words, if a person says, well, my value is just to gain material success, in other words, therefore, my life mission statement is going to reflect that, and therefore, my daily time management is going to reflect that, I'm going to do everything possible from morning till night to achieve that material success, to achieve that outcome, which means I'm not going to also take off time to invest in relationships, for example, or to invest into personal growth, then of course relationships are going to suffer. So it's going to have a direct bearing on what I do each and every single day. If my goal in my life, if people reflect on their own values and decide that, well, we're just here for a few years, so my goal in life is to pursue pleasure, to pursue enjoyment, then we can't turn around in 20 years and be upset and frustrated why we have this inner sense of emptiness and unhappiness. So we have to begin the process of a life mission statement by examining what are our values. What are our values in life? What is important to us? Because what is important to us is going to then have a direct bearing and affect a tremendous impact on how we run every single day. Let me give you a little personal example of just a few days ago, so you understand what I'm trying to get at, of how the end in mind has an effect that we do every day. You know, we all succeed and fail sometimes. This is not one of the great success stories, but nevertheless, it's a good example. None of us are perfect. So I've been trying to recently improve on time management. So getting schedules right, being committed, organized, putting the right time into the right things, priorities, all the things that we've spoken about and we're going to talk about. So a couple of days ago, this is a true story, a couple of days ago I was driving home, I think it was about 3, 4 in the afternoon. It was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was feeling pretty good. My time management had gone well that day, right? So the schedule had worked, I was disciplined, didn't take unnecessary interruptions, all the right techniques. Turned the corner of my street, I was on schedule, and I'm not need to get home until the next schedule. Everything's working out to plan, and I can't find parking. Can't find parking. Now, you need to understand why I can't find parking. I don't know if any of you have been to Anglesey Street lately. Okay.
You can't find parking because I'm in your spot.
Yeah. Now, just no, actually, it's not just you. I saw a lot of people nodding, so I'm thinking maybe it's your fault. It's my street, okay? Okay. So Anglesey Street is a nightmare the last 2 years, and apparently it's going to be a nightmare the next 2 years because Ausgrid, which is the electricity people, are busy building this. I don't know what they're building, but apparently it's good for humanity because it's going to create more electricity and be able to see at night. So I've got to accept that it's necessary. And they've got builders and builders there. Anyway, there's no parking in this whole place from 7 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Plus, the workers are supposed to park in the no parking zone. They park all over the street. And then you got the smash repair guy around the corner who uses Anglesey Street for his cars, and it's a nightmare. So normally if I come home later, it's not a problem, you can find parking, but if I have to come by home at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it's a nightmare. So seriously, I'm driving around the street and cannot find parking, so I said, okay, we'll do another spin all over Flood Street. I come back. By the fourth time, I was really frustrated. Seriously. And as I turned the corner for the fourth time, I'm not proud of this, by the way, but as I turned the corner for the fourth time, just to show you, I'm also human, okay? So as I turned the corner for the fourth time, the smash repair guy was parking his car in the spot that I wanted. And I rolled down the window.
And you told him off?
And I told him off.
Why?
And felt terrible.
You told him off.
And then, it wasn't that bad, okay? But it wasn't right. It wasn't right that I was frustrated.
How did he know that you wanted that spot?
He didn't know. Second of all, no, my problem is that I don't believe he should be parking cars in Anglesey Street. Which I think I'm right, by the way. I don't think he doesn't. He's there for us. You're right. We could debate it. That's not the point. Okay. The point is this that I reflected later on it. And I think it's an important example. I'll try to get it right next time. But because I'd lost 15 minutes, my beautifully designed, successful schedule and time management, which I was going to be proudly report on today, wasn't working, and I failed in the chesed. And the reason is this, you see, it all depends what time management is for. Time management has to achieve two things to use our time effectively. Time management has to make us less stressed, not more stressed, number one. That's the point of time management. Not just to be more successful, it's actually to bring less stress into our lives. Right? And the second thing in the context of our discussion, it's supposed to, whatever we do, if it's time management based on values, time management has to take us closer to our life mission. Now, my life mission includes things like personal growth, like improving my character, like becoming more spiritual and more godly and doing more mitzvot and being better to other people. And thank God I have a life mission, because at least what I was able to do is able to reflect later on it, because that's what a good life mission statement can do. We don't always succeed, but at least we can reflect. And although my schedule was working, but my time management, the ladder was strong, but for those few minutes it was on the wrong wall, because it wasn't taking me closer to my goal. Closer to my goal would be all the things we've talked about when we talked about stress. Closer to my goal would have been to flip from the gvura aspect of time management right away into the chesed, and to say, fine, take a deep breath, that's by divine providence, out of my control, I can't control the world, it's obviously sent to me for a reason, it's God's plan for me for today, to number one, know that I'm not in control, I'm not such a big shot that my schedule worked, and second of all, to remain calm, even though I'm incredibly frustrated by what I think is a correct frustration of not being able to find parking. But nevertheless, so that's, just give you an example about how our long-term goals affect the way we manage our time. Because we've got to understand what our values are, we've got to understand what our long-term goals are, and then based on that, design our life and design the way we're going to plan our days. That's the first thing to bear in mind. That's the first critical thing to bear in mind. Where we develop a life mission statement. The second thing is that it's multi-layered. Right? In other words, we have, it's like a pyramid. We have our long-term general values, general goals. And of course, then they have to translate into what we'd like to achieve in the next 10 years, then next year, the next month, and the next, etc. So obviously, when we do a life mission statement, when we talk about long-term goals are relative. There's the foundational values that govern my life, and then there's how that translates to into decades, into years, into months, and into weeks. Just give you a little bit of an example from a Tanakh story, being about the value of understanding the values that govern our life and how that fits into how we manage our time and how we feel good about the outcome. There's a story in the Tanakh about Hannah. Hannah was the mother of Samuel the prophet. Samuel the prophet was a great prophet. In fact, he was one of the first well-known prophets. And Hannah was his mother. Now, the story goes, the long story, that Hannah was married to a man called Elkanah. Elkanah had two wives, as was the practice sometimes at that time, Peninnah and Hannah. and Peninnah had many children, and Hannah was childless. At that time, they lived in pre-temple times, but there was a tabernacle, a mishkan, in the town of Shiloh. And every festival, they would travel up to Shiloh, to like a pilgrimage, to bring sacrifices, to pray to God, to visit the high priest, to get inspiration, etc. Now, Hannah, we learn in the Talmud that Hannah herself was a prophetess in her own right. She was a righteous woman, she was a learned woman, she was a spiritual woman, she was a woman on a very, very great level, who had already, without children, had already accomplished a tremendous amount in her life. But she was in great pain from the fact that she was childless. So she would join her husband up to the pilgrimage when she would go to Shiloh, and she would come with him, she would pray, she would study, she would get inspiration, and she would obviously pray for a child. And the story goes that one time she came and she was very bitter, and I think we've talked about this around Rosh Hashanah time, and she prayed intensely, and the high priest noticed her praying and thought she was drunk because she was praying excessively, and asked her why she's doing that. She says, "No, I'm actually pouring out my heart to God." At the end of the story, she blessed him with a child. She promised to God that if she has a child, she will raise him in the context of spirituality, and she will dedicate his life to the service of God. And her prayers were answered that year. She came back and she had the child. The next festival that came along, so husband says to her, "Okay, we're going to Shiloh as we always do." So she said, "I'm not going to Shiloh because I'm now a mother, and for the next 2 years my child needs me." And in the Tanakh, the verses make a big deal out of this significant or seemingly insignificant fact, that for a period of time she stopped going to Shiloh. She didn't go. She didn't pray. She didn't get the same inspiration as she got before. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe once in an address took the story and explained that that's a life where we live, that if we live a life based on values, we view what we do very, very differently. Hannah was a very spiritual woman. Hannah gained from her pilgrimage to Shiloh. For her, it was uplifting. It was spiritual. It was rewarding. It was stimulating. And yet, she had no problem not to be able to achieve that in the 2 years she spent with her child. Why? Because her life plan had a life mission statement. And that life mission statement was based on values. And for her, one of the greatest values was spending time with a child. For her, spending time and raising that child for the first 2 years old, and whatever goes into raising a child from 0 to 2 years old, and it's time-consuming, and it's sometimes menial tasks, and sometimes things that... And this is true in everyone's life, and every right? To her, it was no less important, and no less sacred, and no less effective, and no less productive than the time she spent in Shiloh praying and uplifting herself and stimulating herself, etc., etc. Because when we live a life directed by our core values, then everything we do during a day becomes meaningful. See, if we don't have values and we just try to get the most out of every day, then the things that we have to do that we don't like to do or seem less rewarding or seem less stimulating frustrate us. And therefore we have conflicting priorities, and we're trying to get away from things in order to go to things that we enjoy more. But if our daily time management is based on our life mission, it's based on our life goal, our mission, our personal mission statement, and that mission statement is based on our core values, then everything as it evolves and translates all the way down to how we plan each and every single day, that every single thing we do during the day, even the things we enjoy, even recreation, even eating, whatever it is that we do during the day, will fit into our values and will fit into our personal mission statement and will get us closer to our ultimate goal. And then everything becomes of equal importance. And that's a very, very Jewish concept. That's the concept of that the Talmud tells us that we are created to serve God. And serve God doesn't only mean when we're involved in godly matters, right? Serving God means that entire day has a meaning, that everything we do has importance because it fits into that overall goal. As I said, the concept of a personal mission statement is incredibly fundamentally Jewish concept, right? But of course, from a Jewish perspective, making a mission statement becomes easier and becomes a little bit more complicated. What does that mean? First of all, it becomes easier because from a Jewish perspective, values are easier to establish. Because as Jews, we have a moral compass. We have a moral compass that is larger than ourselves. We have a moral compass that we can trust because it's not limited and not subjective to the way people think. Right? We have what's called the Torah. The Torah is a book full of values. The Torah is not just a book that tells you what to do and how to light Shabbos candles, which is very critically important. But the Torah is all-encompassing and addresses every single part of our lives. And as part of the fundamental Jewish belief is, that Torah is divine and therefore provides us with certain fundamental, timeless values, eternal values, that we can trust because they're beyond our limited and finite process of thinking. But they're also all-encompassing, right? Just last week, we had, in the weekly parsha, we had the giving of the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments, we all know, are on two tablets, right? Moses brought down from the mountain two tablets with five commandments on each one. You know that famous joke that the Jews asked how much it cost? They said three, so they said we'll take two. Right? But that's not why it was two. The reason it was two is because, in fact, if you look at the way the Ten Commandments are written, it's actually quite imbalanced. There's many, many more words on the right than there is on the left. Because the five commandments on the left are very short ones, very powerful ones, very important ones, very short, like do not kill, you know, do not steal. Right? The ones on the right are actually a bit more complicated. But why they split up that way? Because they're split up to be two tablets, but part of the same entity. They were one unit. And the ones on the right are more between man and God, as it's called. More spiritual. The one on the left is more between man and people. Right? And the message there is that when Moses, God gave the Torah of Mount Sinai, when Moses came down the mountain, he said, your life values has to be all-encompassing. All-encompassing means that you have to give attention. And that when you develop your own personal mission statement, you'll have to feed and attend to the needs of every single part of who you are, every single part of your soul, and everything that your soul needs. And that includes your spiritual well-being, your emotional well-being, your social well-being, your physical well-being, everything. Right? And that's why, from a Jewish perspective, making a personal mission statement on the one hand is easier, but it's also critical to understand the true values that the Torah provides us with, and that is to be all-encompassing and to make sure that everything fits into that ultimate two tablets which become one, creates that balance, creates that harmony, creates that synergy between everything in our life, that really all becomes one calm existence of everything fitting in to the same goal. Now, when we do develop a personal mission statement, it has two purposes, like I said before. One purpose is that we were able to begin with the end in mind. So when we plan each day, we have a vision of what the picture is supposed to look like. But even equally importantly at least, the second purpose of having a personal mission statement to be able to reflect on is a story I told you before, that when things do get out of hand, or we do fail, and we all do, or when things suddenly get out of control, we're able to take a step back, re-access, re-examine what are our core values. Have a look at our life mission statement, personal mission statement, and readjust and be able to put everything back together. That's an incredibly amazing tool. By the way, this is a really practical thing. I recommend as part of homework that you go home and you actually take a piece of paper. It takes time, by the way. It sounds simple, but it's actually very complicated. It takes time to actually, and I'd say a majority of people have actually never tried this. And it's quite a confronting but yet liberating process to actually sit down and say, hold on a second, I'm in this race of life every single day. I'm rushing from one thing to another, trying to accomplish everything that life demands of me. But let me actually stop and think, what is this all about? Where is this taking me? What is the end in mind? And to actually take a pen and paper and to write down, what are my long-term goals? What are my values? What I want out of life? How am I going to make sure that every part of my life is properly attended to and are given the right balance and fits in with my core values. When we do that, not only are we able to plan, but like I said, when things get out of control, we're able to take it out, stop, re-examine it, re-access it, tap into our core values and put it all back together. I'm not going to do this because it's a bit risky and also we're running out of time, but I tried this yesterday. I thought I was going to do it. It's an amazing, just imagery, it'll help you remember this. From a soda can. If I go like this, right? And I open it up, you know what'll happen. It'll go all over the place. But I only discovered recently there's a way to fix that. Did you know that? Yeah. Try it, we are. I mean, I'm no responsibility. I'm not paying your cleaners bill, but... but do this. You do this for about a couple of minutes. I did it yesterday. It opens up and it's 100% calm. And I saw this and I thought I'd share with you because this is the story of life. Sometimes this happens. And things get completely out of control. We carbonate the soda and everything explodes and goes all over the place in a way that it's just impossible to clean. It's a big mess. And when that happens, when our life is all carbonated and mixed up and shaken up, it's time to stop, take out our personal mission statement, and tap into our core values. Tap into what is our goal? What's the destination? Where are we going? I'll do it later, don't worry. Where are we going? And put it all back together. Now, I want to just... So that's a practical thing, and that's homework number one, to actually do this. You don't have to share it with anyone, but share it with yourself and have it handy. Now, once we've developed a personal mission statement, it's then and only then that we can begin to have a look at how we spend our time every day. And we can start to plan for the year ahead, the months ahead, the week ahead, and the day ahead. And what I want to start with, but we're going to re-examine it next week and develop it properly, is a very, very effective model, which I think I've shared with you in the past, and I'm sure you've seen it elsewhere, and that is the four quadrants of life. All right. Can everyone see this? Okay, I'm going to try and go through this a little bit quickly because we're a little bit late, but... Okay. Generally, everything that we do every day divides into two parts, right? You see, you can only do this if we have values, because what you'll see is that we can fill in these squares based on our personal mission statement and based on our core values. Everything we do is divided into two, which is subdivided into four. It's either important or not important, urgent or not urgent, or both, or none. What's the definition of important? Definition of important is something that fits into our long-term goal, something that fits into our values. It might not be urgent, but it's an important thing. It's important because it fits into our long-term personal mission statement. The definition of urgent is something that requires, or apparently requires, I emphasize that, but it doesn't always require, we just think it requires, our immediate, urgent attention. Okay? So this is the way how it goes. We put on top of this, this is urgent, this is not urgent. This is important. Sorry, my handwriting is not the best. And this is not important. In other words, our life is made up of four different things. That's what happens every single day. We have things that are important and urgent. We have things that are important but not urgent. We have things that are not important but urgent, or we think they're urgent. And then we have things that are clearly not important and not urgent. Okay? Let's try and work this through together. Let's do this quickly. Give me some examples of something that's important and urgent.
Illness.
Okay, a crisis, right. So, God forbid, someone faints, someone is sick. That's important and it's certainly urgent. You've got a project, work, you must finish. A deadline, right? Otherwise you won't get paid. That's pretty important, pretty urgent.
Preparing for Shabbat on time.
Okay, that's actually a good example. You know what's an example? Because we'll soon see how this line sometimes is in our control, sometimes not. Okay? I'm happy you brought that example up because certain things are not in our control. Life is going to have things which are crises and are going to have things which are important and urgent. Out of our control, God sends them to us, it's our mission. But there are also things that become important and urgent because we didn't deal with them when they were important and not urgent. Okay. And that's, so it could be a very good example, right? It's Shabbat afternoon, Shabbat's coming in 20 minutes, and we're not ready. Okay, and there's a number of examples. Let's talk about things that are important but not urgent. But what you mean, they don't require immediate attention. Nothing will happen, so to speak, in the immediate future if we don't do them. Give me some examples.
Taking care of your health.
Okay. House care. How about study? Personal study. Oops. Go on.
Making phone calls.
Sorry?
A phone call.
Okay, I'm talking more like a project. Okay. How about relationship building?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Time.
Sorry?
Time.
Oh, time. You need time for all of these, but, you know. Rest. Exercise. Sorry?
What's on the house care
about? House care study. Personal growth or study. Right.
Eating properly.
Right. Health. Health plan, etc., etc. Right. None of these, if we don't do them today, the world won't fall apart. But they're important. Understand? They're important, but not urgent. Let's go to things which are not important but urgent. Okay. Not important but urgent, or apparently urgent. So, annoying, needless interruptions. The phone goes and someone interrupts you. It's urgent because the guy wants to talk to you now. It might not be urgent, actually, but it's apparently urgent, right? Right. Interruptions. Someone emails you and wants a very, very quick response. Everyone else's issues, you know, small issues, minor issues, they're not usually important, but they want your attention now. Very, very often happen. In fact, if you examine your day, you'll see we waste a lot of time with these things that appear to be urgent, but not necessarily important. And then, of course, finally, you've got things which are not important and not urgent, like just wasting time. Right? Escape activities. Excessive TV watching when you know there's so many things you need to do, but you just procrastinate. Okay? I'm not writing this all down, Grantham. Excessive internet surfing, whatever the case is, all these things which are certainly not important. They might be important at a certain dose level, okay? But when they become excessive, or they might not be important altogether. They're not important, they're certainly not urgent. Now, this needs a little bit of thought. But you see how this can only be done if you first have your values. Because how are you going to determine what's important? Right? If relationship building is important, that's because that's your value. If study is important, it's your value. It's because that's where you're going, based on your value. That's where you want to go. You want to achieve a certain goal. That's because it's part of your value system. Right? So you have to have that personal mission statement first before you can do this. So I'd like to... Now, this needs a lot of work. And we're going to work on this next week because this needs a lot of attention. Let me leave you just with two things. First, let me leave you with a practical activity because it's really the foundation to good, effective time management. I'd recommend, and do this seriously, that during the week you do two things. One is you make a personal mission statement, or the beginning of one. And number two, you draw this on a big piece of paper and start to make a list in each quadrant. Look at your day. Reflect on your day, or look at your values. Reflect on the things you want to do but haven't got around to do them because they're important to you. And the reason you haven't got down to do them is because they're not urgent. Right? And what we'll look at next week, and we'll look at practical strategies on how to do that, one of the critical and most important goals of effective time management, and especially effective time management based on values, is one simple formula. The simple formula is to take these four quadrants, to put more time in here, and the more time we put in quadrant two, the less time we're going to have to put in here. We'll always have to put in some time to urgent important because some things are out of our control. But the more time we learn to put into what is not urgent but important, the less, when we don't give these things attention, they spill over into here. When we don't give a child enough attention, suddenly there's a crisis with that child's behavior, with the child's relationship. When we don't invest enough time into our own personal studies, suddenly we go through a crisis and we feel empty and unhappy. When we don't invest in our relationships, suddenly there's a problem with relationships. The more time, and in business, and in time, and in money making, every part of life, the more time we put into quadrant two, the less time we have to put into here. The goal of time management, value time management, value-based time management is, put more time into here, less time into here, very little time into here, and trying to get rid of quadrant four. That's the goal. We don't always get there 100% perfectly, but that's certainly the goal. And what we need to work on next week and in the weeks coming is, how do we do that? But that's the foundation. Have a great week.